Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon, Jordana. It's 5:10. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. It's looking a little overcast from my window here in the WCCO radio studio downtown, and is looking busy on the roads out there. I'm joined in studio by a fan of the show. Lynn texts me all the time, and I knew she was coming into the cities to visit. She texted me on my night show. She texts me now that I'm filling in on the afternoons, and I'm happy to have you in the show. Sure, Mike's not on, but she's going to hang out with us and watch us how we do this radio thing. It's not all that exciting. Trust me. It's probably more exciting listening in your car, but I'm happy to have Lynn in the studio with me. Let's talk a little more healthcare. The Senate Republicans announced their health care bill this afternoon. It's the new, revised, improved, better version of the GOP health care bill today. And there were a couple of changes in it. The modified draft includes additional funding to combat the opioid epidemic. It includes a controversial measure that would allow insurance companies to sell plans that don't comply with Obamacare consumer protections. You still get a little bit of a subsidy if you were getting one, but it's probably going to be reduced. There is still no federal funding for Planned Parenthood, for Medicaid, for those receiving Medicaid funding for a year. Okay, it would block Planned Parenthood from receiving Medicaid funding for a year. That was in the original one as well. Couple of changes. What do they mean to you? How does this affect you? My next guest is going to help you sort it all out. Twyla Brace is the president of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and she's joining me here to talk about this new Senate bill. Hi, Twyla.
Hi, Jordana. Thank you.
Good. So tell us, what is the CCHF, the Citizens Council for Health Freedom?
So we're an organization that supports the freedom that's necessary for patients and doctors to interact with each other, to get the right diagnoses. And so we do everything possible to protect that relationship, and we believe that freedom is the best way to do it.
Okay, so you are nonpartisan. You're just here for the patient.
We're here for the patient and for the doctor, because they both need to work together.
Okay.
And one of the big things that we do has to do with privacy, because we believe he who holds the data makes the rules. So you'll see a lot from us having to do with privacy, because that's important for patients to be willing to even talk to doctors, mm-hmm. and to keep the government and others out of our medical records.
Is there anything in the new Senate bill or the old one that has anything to do with privacy that you are very concerned about and you're watching?
I don't think they really haven't touched much about privacy at all. There's a lot of things actually in the Affordable Care Act that destroy privacy, essentially, make all of this reporting from the doctors to the government and put the health plans more in charge of what happens with the doctors through the use of data, through electronic health records. A lot of people don't understand that,
mm-hmm.
but there's nothing really in this bill that I can see that really deals with the privacy issue.
All right. So I mentioned before you came on with us the new modified draft, additional funding to combat opioids. I don't think anybody would give a hard time on that. But there is a new measure in the bill that says insurance companies can sell plans that don't comply with the Obamacare protections. Tell me a little bit about that.
So we know a lot about this, because this is something that has been very important for us to bring back the affordability of coverage. So before managed care, before government health care, there has really been something and was something called an indemnity health insurance policy. And essentially that health insurance policy figured out the cost of things sort of in the area that you lived in. And when you had something happen to you that was major, that was going to really impact your bank account, then the insurance company would pay you the check. They would give you the check, and mm-hmm. you would pay your doctor and your hospital if it was a heart attack, if it was whatever. So we know somebody now who, in the early 70s, he had a heart attack, or not a heart attack, he had to have heart surgery.
Okay.
And his indemnity insurance company paid him a check for $68,000, which he then used to pay his doctor in hospital. And the very next year, he had to have the surgery over again. So the insurance company paid him $72,000, which he used to pay his hospital and doctor. And what he said was, you know, it was very simple. And of course it was, and the policy was affordable because, one, it was for the catastrophic conditions, the kind of things that are going to really harm your bank account, your ability to stay financially sound. And then it also meant that everything that happened to you at a doctor's office was never run through an insurance company, which meant that the doctor's office and the hospital never had to charge you for all of this overhead that third-party payers require. So whether it's paperwork or electronic health records, which are really expensive, or reporting or retroactive review or, you know, all of these sorts of things, that didn't happen. You had a direct contract with your insurer, mm-hmm. and your insurer paid you, and then you paid your doctor and your hospital. And that kept the third parties out of the medical decisions and kept all of health care more affordable.
But that was a long time ago, Twyla.
Oh, yes, that was a long time ago, but mm-hmm. that is the way you pay for everything else in your life. You don't have somebody else mediating and therefore increasing the cost of what you can and cannot have. And so there is still that kind of thing happening today. It's just not happening very much because Obamacare obliterated it. It actually prohibits catastrophic coverage for anyone over the age of 29. So all of those policies that people used to have, they lost them. And so, you mean, those kind of policies...
But they were replaced with something else. I mean, you just said Obamacare obliterated catastrophic care for anybody over 29. If you have a catastrophic illness and you have insurance, you'll still get care and you'll get money for it.
Yes, it's just that it made the policy, because it pays for so many other things and it requires you to pay for so many other things, and it's managed care only. See, Obamacare put managed care in control. So these corporations, they got the whole kit and caboodle. Bloomberg Government News, whatever it was called, said it was a $1 trillion windfall for the health plans. They got the entire market. The catastrophic policies that were out there, the ones that would like offer a policy for $40 for an individual or you know, $50 or $60 for an individual, those had to go away. And those were catastrophic policies. Therefore, you know, if you got into an automobile accident, if you got cancer, if you got some major expensive chronic condition, that was a policy that was there just for that. For everything else, it would be routine and minor. Those are not actually insurable conditions, but that's what we have today, and that's why.
But you make it sound like Obamacare doesn't pay for catastrophic conditions, and it does.
No, it does pay for catastrophic conditions, but it's kind of funny what Obamacare did. So, you know, people are experiencing these really high deductibles, right? Those really high deductibles before Obamacare with an indemnity policy had a premium that was so low. But now you have these really high deductibles and these really high premiums. And so you have so much less in your pocket for your premium in order to pay for that high deductible. When you had a true indemnity policy, which is why we're talking about this, because that's why you asked the question, right? Bringing that kind of policy and that kind of ability to have that kind of policy. When you had that kind of policy, yes, you had a high deductible, but you had a really low premium. And then there were lower prices for routine and minor care.
But this was a long time ago. You're talking about before the Clinton era of managed care and HMOs.
Well, not actually, because it took a while. It took Obamacare to really jettison everything else out of health care, because it gave it to the managed care organizations. And that's one of our concerns with this bill, actually, is that it doesn't appear to us like any of those indemnity policies can come back, but that the managed care organizations can offer this catastrophic policy and nobody else. So it still keeps them in charge. But not only that, what this bill does is it requires everybody to be in the same risk pool in the individual market, which people might initially like the sound of. But in a true catastrophic policy, which is truly affordable, actually, I just have to tell you, I know a couple who's been traveling around for a year, and so they don't have any income, so they got one of the exemptions from Obamacare, right? So they were able to get a catastrophic policy because they met all the hardship waiver and exemptions. And so they're paying $150 a month for a catastrophic policy. So this is not like it's not possible. It's just very few people have access today to it because it's been virtually prohibited unless you can meet all the exemptions, right? And so this is entirely possible. But if you put everybody in this risk pool, which is what the Senate bill does.
See, I thought they put them in different risk pools. I thought they said if you need a lot of care, this bill will allow the insurance companies to charge you a whole lot more money. And in fact, if you are low cost and low care, you can buy and young and healthy, you can buy a bare bones policy. That's Ted Cruz's whole motive here, that he wants you to be able to buy a bare bones policy if you don't require a lot of care.
And that's true. It's just that they didn't actually take the Cruz language fully. In the bill, as we read it, it says to me very clearly that it has to be a single risk pool and that all of these folks, including those who have a catastrophic policy from what I think is going to be only a managed care organization, have to be put into the same risk pool. After all, the requirement in the bill is that you can offer that kind of policy, the bare bones, as long as you can offer one mandate-rich Obamacare policy. Well, the only ones who can offer and be completely compliant with Obamacare are the managed care companies who are up and running and doing it now. So they got the whole market. Our organization would like there to be an option to have a truly affordable catastrophic coverage policy.
What does that look like?
That would look like exactly what I told you about the guy who had the heart attack. It would look like the $150 that this couple is paying. But if you merge the risk pools together, that's not going to happen. We don't believe it's still going to be affordable for anyone. So it's sort of like a new way of doing the problem that we have today and the reason why the premiums are so expensive for all sorts of people.
Twyla, are you an advocate for single payer?
No. No, we're not. We're an advocate for bringing all the prices down, getting the third parties, the managed care organizations, out and bringing the prices down. I don't know if you have ever heard of the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. Has that ever crossed your path?
No.
Okay. So the Surgery Center only doesn't do third-party payments. So they only do cash, check, or charge. They got Canadians coming down there. Those were the first ones that came down. Then all the uninsured from around the country come down there. Their prices are 50 to 90% less than hospitals because they don't deal with the overhead. And so one of the things we like to tell people is the price of today, the scary price of today, is as a result of the way we do healthcare today, but it doesn't have to be that way.
Twyla, I want to cut you off here. Susan in Minneapolis has a question for you, and I want to get her question in. Hi, Susan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Sure.
I guess I just disagree with the fact that, and I'm sorry, I don't know who this person is who's on with you right now, but that the third-party payers are the ones that are driving up all the costs and that they're responsible for the cost of health care. Insurance doesn't drive the cost of health care. Medical providers drive the cost of health care and pharmaceutical companies. And I wholly disagree with what you're saying.
All right, Susan, let's have Twyla respond. I appreciate the call, Susan. Thank you. And the person I'm talking to is Twyla Brace. She is the president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. Twyla, go ahead.
Sure. So absolutely, the third-party payment is a problem because it is the insurers who tell the doctors what they have to do that has nothing to do with taking care of you. And so, for instance, there's a study recently that talked about how the doctors are spending 2 hours in front of the computer checking boxes for both the government and the health plans for every hour that they spend with patient care. There is a reason why the doctors are retiring early. 48% of the doctors are planning to either retire early, move into concierge medicine where they've got so many fewer patients that they even take care of, or go into non-clinical medicine, or a whole variety of other things that would take them out of the patient-doctor equation. This bureaucratic mess that has been created by the third-party payer adds phenomenal cost to the price of doing business. I just had who was it? I think it was an orthopedist. I just had an orthopedist tell me, well, maybe it was a different specialist, come to think of it, that he's not really making money because of what he has to do with the electronic health record. He's got to hire two scribes just to take his notes. And so, you know, I disagree with the caller, but I appreciate, you know, calling in and making that point. But if you look at where all the money goes, it is not to the doctors. Theirs has been actually decreasing. So
Twyla,
I think that's just a good thing to think about.
I appreciate it, Twyla. I'm out of time. Interesting conversation that you that you bring up. Twyla Brace is the president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and I appreciate your time. It's 525. I'll read your text and take a couple of calls when we return. Welcome back. We have a few minutes left in the half hour, and I want to take your calls because this is a conversation that needs to we need to keep having this conversation, and we need to hear all sides. Clearly, Twyla is an advocate for complete privatization of the whole healthcare system. She doesn't like the HMOs, and she doesn't like the she certainly doesn't care. So she wants to go back in the day when maybe the insurance company used to write my mom a check, you know, for our medicine. So interesting privatization conversation she was having. Let's see. Michael isn't savage. Michael's got a thought. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
You have a thought, Michael, you'd like to share with the group?
So, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with everything the person who you just had on was saying, but there is a place where she's a little bit off, and that's in terms of where the profits are made here. You know, a good way to look at things is profits, and a good way to measure that is what is the return on revenue? So for every dollar I get, how much of that dollar is actually profit to me? And the insurance companies, and this was there's a Washington Post article on this, and also it involved, I think it was Fortune or Forbes magazine who looked into this. And medical insurers only make 2.2% profit. So for every dollar you give your insurer, they only get 2.2 cents of profit. On the other hand, medical device manufacturers and pharmaceutical companies make between 16 and 20 cents on the dollar profit and have much higher revenues than your insurance companies. Additionally, doctors are basically everyone loves their doctor and hates their insurance company because your insurance company tells you what you can and can't have covered. And so you hate your insurance company, but they're really just trying to control costs and control premium costs with those things that are covered and aren't covered. Your doctor, on the other hand, they're basically the highest paid profession out there. You go to any small to medium sized rural town that's got a hospital, and the highest paid person in that town is the hospital administrator.
Michael, I want to get another call in, but I appreciate you calling in. Scott's in Mound. Scott, I have about 30 seconds left.
Jordana, how you doing?
Hi, Scott. Hi, Scott. Your thoughts, my friend.
My thoughts are this. You guys call yourself a talk show program. Chad says it. You say it. John Williams say you're
That's
a talk
what we
show
do.
Program.
We talk.
Yet you bring on experts, and you're trying to do two things. You're trying to entertain and try to give us information that matters. What you guys need to do, finally, somebody needs to do it. You need to pin down lawyers and politicians and give them the same scrutiny you just gave your guest, because your guest gave us bullshit. There's
okay, there we go. Said. All right. When you curse, Scott, we got to pick you off the air. Tim's in Coon Rapids. Tim's, you are a all right, Tim, I'm sorry, honey. I'm out of time. We'll talk a little bit more about mental health care when we return.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I love having feisty discussions with you, but you can't curse on the air, guys. That's what happened to our last caller, so we had to cut him off. So don't think I didn't want to hear his point of view. I absolutely want to hear his point of view. You just can't say bad words on the air because then the FCC pulls us off the air, and that's not good for anybody. Well, from healthcare to mental health, it is all intertwined. Our positively viral story of the day is about a woman named Madeline Parker. She tweeted out to her team. Oh, no, she emailed to her team that she was going to need a mental health day. This is her exact email. Hey, team, I'm taking today and tomorrow to focus on my mental health. Hopefully I'll be back next week refreshed and back to 100%. Thanks, Madeline. The CEO of her company responded this way. Hey, Madeline, I just wanted to personally thank you for sending emails like this. Every time you do, I use it as a reminder of the importance of using sick days for mental health. I can't believe this is not standard practice at all organizations. You are an example to us all and help cut through the stigma so we can all bring our whole selves to work. Awesome CEO, right? Boss of the year. She then posted that on social media, and it went totally viral. And it started the conversation about mental health days versus actual sick days and what we need to stay healthy. Joining me now is Dr. Roger LaRoche. He is a psychiatrist with Allina Health to talk about the importance of mental health days. Dr. LaRoche, I'm so happy to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
All right. So are they different than sick days?
Well, no, in that both sick days, mental health days, they point to the same need, which is to give our body a respite, to help it heal before it gets ill.
I said sick days, I use them, you know, when you have strep throat or you're contagious. I feel like sick days are almost protection for my coworkers. You know, if I have a cold and I'm sneezing all over the place, I don't want to come to work because then that puts them at risk. And that's not really fair. A cold is not something that you want to share with the group. But a mental health day is really, it's something, it's part of self-care. It's something, you know, it's not for your coworkers. It truly is for yourself because, you know, you have to stay sane, right? You need some time. And I know I have taken mental health days. I'm sure I just called them sick days at the time. But you're not good to anybody when you show up for work needing a mental health day.
That's right. And, you know, maybe the best way to understand it, the brain is at the key of what we're talking about. Mental health is what's determined by our brain's status. Mm-hmm. And the brain is just an organ. You use the example of the cold or flu. You know, you might be a professional opera singer or, in your case, a radio personality. You need a voice. And so you may have laryngitis or a bad throat. That doesn't mean it's a bad throat that you need to remove. It means simply you need a few days to recover.
Sure.
It's like the brain. The brain is just a collection of tissues that gets sick. Sometimes it gets better in a few days. Sometimes it doesn't. Like our throat, like our stomach, like joints. So I think the reason it's so great to be aware of this, we all have just a common old brain, and all of our brains can get sick, like all of our throats, all of our stomachs can get sick.
But there's still a stigma around it. A 2016 survey from the American Psychological Association says less than half of working Americans say their organization supports employee well-being. One in three report being chronically stressed. So when you say, I need a mental health day, there's still that, oh, she's crazy, or, oh, she's, you know, clinically depressed. And there's that terrible stigma around a real disease that should be lifted, and it's still there.
Well, you have a good point. And, you know, throughout time, stigmas have kind of been what we do to the unknown. Cancer was in that similar situation about 50 years ago.
Sure.
We didn't know what to do with it. There was a stigma. Other races. Other genders, other nationalities used to be a stigma. So whatever's unknown, we kind of stigmatize, we stay away from, we don't want our family members to associate with that stigma. And that's why it's so great to be talking about it. Now, that's how we help destigmatize it.
Right.
And might I say, you know, 50%, that's one out of every two of us, 50% of us will at some point in our life develop significant psychiatric condition that could use intervention, that needs intervention.
Did you say one in five?
Well, one in five is how many people have psychiatric symptoms within a year.
Yeah.
I said 50% if it's a lifetime occurrence.
Mm,
so this is something, you know, we're saying we all have, the majority of us have had problems with other organs of our body, be it joints or stomach. But the brain, at least a minimum of 50% of us are going to have some problem with our brain during some time of the year. And back to your original question about mental health days, sometimes we feel it coming on. Well, the best thing we can do is listen to our body, recognize those symptoms, and kind of take a respite before it gets worse.
Yeah. A Gallup poll shows work stress can lead to employees becoming disengaged at work And disengaged workers have 37% higher absenteeism. They just call them sick days. 49% more accidents and 60% more errors and defects. And I know these things are I mean, look, these are hard numbers. And, you know, it's hard to say, well, because you were a little off that day or because you were a little distracted that day. But that all is they're all results of, you know, being emotionally disengaged or mentally, you know, needing a break.
That's right. That's right. And you know, even just like how you said it, needing a break, you hit the nail on the head, because if we don't take that break, just like we don't lay down when our body is sick, it's going to get worse. We could have a bronchitis. We keep pushing. We keep running. It's going to become pneumonia. So exactly like you're saying, we have symptoms in our brain demonstrating that it's going to get worse. If we don't take a break, it's going to become a lot worse.
Can mental health days be used against us by our bosses or by insurance companies? Is there any way to code that say we might be at high risk?
You know, it's a good question. I can't speak for the companies. I love the email that you read because here's a woman who did it very professionally. And I think the companies that might use it against us will have a harder time doing so unless if we're really professional about it, like your example. She said very bravely, I need some mental health days because I'm suffering with, you know, depression or something. I recognize my symptoms, know my body. I'm going to be back next week, full force. She let them know she's going to come back. She's going to be better than before. And that's how it should be.
Right.
So oftentimes if businesses give us a hard time, it's because we ourselves are stigmatizing ourselves and saying, you know, I just need a little break. What does a break mean? Let's be honest like this woman and say, I know me. Mm-hmm. I want to work 110%. You know me, but I got to make sure my brain's in great shape.
I think there's also going to be then this learning curve for employers. Employers are going to have to understand that mental health days are a thing that everybody needs, and they're not getting 100% out of their employees if they're not offering that.
Well, you're right. And, you know, I guess this kind of answers the question, too, to some degree. You know, of all the causes of disability, number one is mental illness.
Really? Is that true? Really?
Yeah, number one is mental illness, but it kind of makes sense. I mean, you know, we keep postponing the need for mental health days. We're just going to get worse. And we keep getting worse and worse. And ultimately, our brain, which is by far the most complicated organ in our body, ultimately, once that starts getting sicker and sicker, it takes longer to come back from it. So, yeah, that's right. That's an actual statistic. And about 30% of all disability claims are attributed to mental illness.
What else do we need? Go ahead. I'm sorry, sir.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, so that's how common it is. And really, bravo to this woman for writing that note. I think the reason it resonated is because so many of us are in the similar situation, but don't have the bravery that she did or the confidence.
And thankfully, a supportive boss. I mean, his response is what made it so revolutionary and
that's right.
You know, applaudworthy and viral. I'm speaking with Dr. Roger LaRouche. Dr. Roger is a psychiatrist with Allina Health. What else did I not ask you? What else do we need to know, Doc?
Well, I think what's important to know is that help is out there. The majority of psychiatric conditions get better. When we have examples of family members who don't get better, tragically, that's because they didn't step out in time. And this woman that you gave the example of, she stepped out and said, I need the help. Let's do that for our loved ones, our family members. If we see coworkers that look a little stressed, we need to be confident and say to them, hey, out of love, out of concern, it may be something more than just a bad day. Engage them to talk about it and encourage them to talk to the bosses. The more we talk about it with our friends, the more we encourage our coworkers to come forth, the better. And back to one of your original questions, it's imperative that we help destigmatize mental illness, because like we said, at least 50% of us are going to be afflicted with it.
Dr. Roger LaRouche, thank you so much. Psychiatrist with Allina Healthcare, we appreciate you having this conversation with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
It's a conversation we have to keep talking about because this really is about stigma. And if we all just release it, then it goes away. If we all just get over it, then it goes away. I am willing to bet 99% of people go through life struggling at some point with some kind of emotional challenge or some kind of mental illness. Maybe it's undiagnosed, but I'm going to say at least 90% of us struggle with it at some point. So you and I get to choose if we release that stigma. It's just that easy. I don't know too many lazy people. I hope Al doesn't either, and I hope you don't either. I hope America is not on the top of that list. Talking about mental health, this is a hard one. It really is a hard one. Hey, Jor, I'm on a campaign to change the stigma and attitudes about mental health. Why not call it what it is? Brain health. There you go. Brain health. I appreciate that. Good campaign to be on. I'm sort of on that bandwagon right now after I read that viral story. Jor, if you got a pissy day, just stay home. Okay. Just don't have too many. Well, that's kind of what it is. But sometimes it's not just a bad mood day. It's sort of a greater problem. And talking about it then frees up somebody else to talk about it. Hey, Jor, these are wonderfully altruistic and idealist notions that don't find foundation in the business world. Unfortunately, all too often, they don't. They really don't. But they should. I think these companies with social consciences, and even this one, the woman that kicked off the story, you know, this is an existing company. Obviously, those are people that are interested in talking about mental health and learning more about it and giving people, you know, a break when they need it. I think it's all good. Hey, Jor, well, if you're one of those people who goes around and announces themselves that you're mentally ill, those people who say it aren't the ones who are. So just go to work. I don't know. I don't imagine that somebody's going to walk around the office saying that they have a mental illness, you know, just for attention. I don't see it happening that way. Well, because I'm here with you today, that means Moose Miller is on tonight. He is going to be joined by two brothers from the South Metro. They're going to bring their construction know-how to restore cabins. Oh, I love those shows. Rustic Renovations is their show. They're going to join Moose tonight at 9 o'clock. On the weekends, I am addicted to HGTV, so I will be tuning in for that. And Mike Max is filling in for me tomorrow because I take those, well, they're fun days, right? They're Friday fun days with my kids to be with them tomorrow in the summer. I had a blast with you. The news is next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.